disease! I've been expecting you. My name is Sergeant Slaughter, Special Drill Instructor for G.I. Joe.
That's terrific, Sarge, but I'm trying to cut down on the chicken sweat just now, so if you'll excuse me.
You're going nowhere, Space Case. You're here because your industrials may follow up. My job is to whip you into shape, and I'm talking whip. There's only two ways out of my command. On your feet like a man, or in a ditty bag. An itty-bitty ditty bag. Got it?
Yes, sir.
That's better.
Lawler connecting solidly. And it's Rip Rogers in trouble now as Lawler catches him. A good hard right hand right between the eyes.
Special Ruto, U Japan Super Fight を行います。青コーナーより、イレズミモンスター、クラッシャーバンバンビの入場。
果たしてこのカードを実現してしまったことが良かったのかどうなのか。
Wrestling fans, be following tag team event. It is set for one fall. Introducing first from Morristown, Tennessee, weighing 224 pounds, White Lightning, Tim Horner. His tag team partner from Marietta, Georgia, 234 pounds, the Candyman, Brad Armstrong.
Welcome indeed, I'm Gordon Stoley, and welcome to another hour of Championship Wrestling from Georgia, and we have a very spirited crowd here at the Television Sports Arena.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Carl Stern Classic Wrestling Audio Show, here at Figure4Online.com, WrestlingObserver.com. I am Carl Stern, and I'm back now, finally, after a several-week hiatus with only a couple shows in there, as I had a lot of stuff going on. I'd been on vacation. Then just upon my return, I got married and moved into a new house. And so now, kind of getting settled in a little bit, kind of getting things back to normal in some sort of routine, and get back on target with putting up new audio shows here at the Figure 4 Online Empire. Thank everybody for their kind comments along the way, and all the emails and calls I've got, text messages. I greatly appreciate that. And so everything's good. Everything's great. Settling in, just you know how your life gets. If you've ever moved, you know what kind of massive upheaval that is. And just it's taken a while to, you know, integrate two families together and get settled into a new home and everybody get into their routines and schedules. And so normally when I would record the shows, it would be the nights that my fiance worked and I was off. We both worked night shifts on different days, or we have actually rotating schedules. And so sometimes we're off together, sometimes she's at work and I'm off, sometimes I'm at work and she's off. And I usually always recorded the shows on nights where she was at work and I was off, which rolls around where usually one day a week that'll happen, coincide with that way. But because things have been so hectic and chaotic and just the massive amount of stuff to move, consolidating two apartments into one house, it was just overwhelming, and there just wasn't a lot of time to record stuff. But I haven't been on the board in a while, and I am debating whether to go back there or not. So if you depended on me posting on the board that, you know, there was a new audio show, you may have possibly missed the last two as they went up just on the front page. And I'm not sure I'm going to do that. I appreciate everybody that's on the board. There's a lot of good people there, a lot of friendly people. There's also a lot of bad apples over on the board, and it just seems like they are more vocal than the good folks that are actually, you know, interested in wrestling content. There's a lot of trolls there. There are a lot of people that are interested in wrestling, and then there's just a lot of people there to make trouble. And just, I don't need the hassle. I got enough going on in my life without having to deal with negative people. So I think I'm just going to forego going on the board and posting links to the show. Just let it appear on the front page, and the folks that want it can download it, and the people who hate people from the South can just ignore it and deal with it. So don't even want to have to deal with these people anymore. So appreciate all the folks that listen to this show and everybody that emails in questions. They are greatly appreciated. And for those of you who are just around to stir up trouble, well, I could care less if you listen here or not. So thank you, and forget you all, and to whomever it may apply. So I do have several email questions that have come in since the last show. In fact, the email box is now pretty much full, so we get on these. I know some of these have been sent in. In fact, they're dating some of them, these questions, all the way back to mid-August. So let's knock some of them out. If I haven't answered them lately on the show, we're going to try to get rid of these and get back on that schedule of answering questions. So please send them in. The address to send them to is carl@carlstern.com. That's Carl with the letter K, K-A-R-L, at carlstern.com. And I'm also working with a new website called flyingbodypress.com. It's, in fact, that's where carlstern.com takes you now, but that address, email address, still works fine. It's there was initially a business model that we were going to be doing news on not just wrestling, but MMA and comics and things of that nature. And we're still hashing out exactly what that service is going to become over there. But I invite you to check it out and participate. And we're looking for people especially to donate some articles and so forth to that site. We don't really want it wrestling heavy, as that's only going to be like a you know, maybe a third of the site devoted to wrestling. So, but if you have any, if you're interested in any of the other things to talk about over there, by all means, if you want to send in a an article, we'd love to have it. The Dragon King Wrestling Newsletter. It's been a while since we, back before I went on vacation and everything, since I put out an issue. I am going to work on a new issue tomorrow night, so possibly this week we'll get back into posting those up as well. And maybe, all in all, get back on some sort of normal schedule around here. So we'll take our customary first break, come right back, and then we're going to jump into some questions, and we've got quite a few of them to get into. So take our first break, be right back after this.
Match like that, you've barely broken a sweat, as they say.
Well, the only reason Superstar Billy Graham is sweating right now is because these lights are 109 degrees on the set, and Mr. Billy Cooper, Bobby Cone right here, has got bad body odor, you understand, making me say, scoot over, man, give me some room. Superstar Billy Graham right here, you are looking at, visually, the Florida State Heavyweight Championship of the World Belt. Now, you're also looking at the martial arts championship, world championship belt of the entire world of Superstar Billy Graham rules. I know for a fact the human pythons of Superstar Billy Graham has will defend this belt against any living man walking, crawling, running, driving a car, or hitchhiking, which might be the case of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I know the American Dream. Sir Oliver Humperdinck's research has brought the fact that the American Dream is begging, buying, and would steal a chance to get this belt around his fat belly again. But Mr. American Dream, Superstar Billy Graham, has got the 22-inch pythons, the human pythons, and in no way, shape, or form, if you ever want to crawl into the ring with Superstar Billy Graham, you must face the man with the unbelievable strongest full Nelson on the face of the earth, the world's strongest arms, arm wrestling champion of the world, Florida State champion of the world, and American dream. I will make you crawl like a baby at my knees. Big like a baby, American dream, Dusty Rhodes. All you can do is dream about this belt, because baby, you'll never wear it again. Never wear the Florida State Championship again. It is superstar Billy Graham's belt. I represent the belt, but not the people. The belt, but not the people. I am the greatest.
Thank you.
I believe it's the greatest superstar Billy Graham, 22.
Thank you.
And I have, thank you for what?
Well,
you
thank
felt
you.
Nothing out here. I don't want to go off the air.
We have I'm a match in the ring. We have a match in the ring. Let's go to the ring.
Talk about my belt.
Okay, we're back, and let's jump right into the email bag. This is actually a question about the Kindle, and it's a question I've gotten several times, folks who have who own Amazon Kindles, and we make the Dragon King newsletter available on Kindle. You can order it directly from the Amazon store, or you can just copy it straight off the website, put it on a notepad file, and add it on. And this question has come up several times. It's about SD cards, SD memory cards that go into the Kindle. Occasionally people write me and say, you know, I've added a lot of books. There's a lot of public domain books through Google and different websites where you can just, you know, you can just copy these public domain books and put them on a notepad file, put them on an SD card, and read them on Kindle. In fact, I've got like a whole folder full of bookmarks of a different public domain books. The one I use a lot is Project Gutenberg, which is www.gutenberg.org, and that is G-U-T-E-N-B-E-R-G, Gutenberg.org. Of course, Gutenberg was the inventor of the printing press, and that's why it's named after him. But so much is available on there, and some people have run into problems where their content doesn't appear on there. They'll put it on an SD card and everything will be fine. They'll have no problem. Then they'll put a book or something on there and all of a sudden they can't, you know, there's a problem. Well, I've noticed this myself once or twice, and what it is a corrupted file on your SD card. So whatever the last two or three things you put on there was, just take your SD card and put it back in your computer and maybe delete the last two or three files you put on there, because one of them most likely is corrupted or in a bad format or something. Maybe instead of Notepad, you hit WordPad or something like that, and it's locked the Kindle up. That's happened to me before, is the reason I know. If you order anything directly from Amazon, let's say you order the Dragon King newsletter directly from Amazon, you not have any problems at all, because they format the things there and wirelessly deliver it. It's only when you I just, when I pull up the Observer newsletter on the website, I highlight all the text, copy and paste it into a notepad file, and you know, occasionally for whatever reason, maybe it didn't close out right or something, or I have in the past actually, instead of hitting Notepad, I'd hit WordPad instead, and that would cause a problem. So I always keep a folder on my computer of all the books and newsletters that I put on my Kindle, and that way I can go back and reread stuff too. And that way, if I ever have a SD card that malfunctions, I can just, you know, delete everything on the card and put everything back on there, and usually that solves the problem. So I hope that helps. That's from Bradley, actually, but I've got that same question from three or four people over the last couple years, so maybe they'll help you out. This is from Jimbo, and he asks, will you consider if there have been any wrestlers who were always a face or always a heel? I found this interesting to debate, as most wrestlers had terms or had turns at some point in their careers. This has been discussed on over Wrestling Classics a few times on their message board, and it's a topic that's come up, and a lot of people, there's not very many people out there who haven't at some point in time turned. I believe Ricky Steamboat is probably the most high-profile wrestler never to make a heel turn, and I'm not even sure if that's true. You would think at some point in time he did heel. I will say this, I will say during the main part of his career, I don't remember, and I think it's been pretty well settled that he never had a heel run. But now, you know, since he retired, I'm talking about maybe the last 10, 15 years before, you know, he had that long period of time out of wrestling, and then he did a few shots here and there for, like, Ring of Honor as, like, you know, not actually as a wrestler, I don't think, but he came in as, like, commissioner or something, and he's popped up in TNA a time or two. And, you know, he may have been like a heel commissioner in TNA or something. A lot of those just, you know, TNA's done so much so fast that didn't count from one show to the next. It's hard to remember. But just in his actual wrestling career, say from, you know, the mid-1990s back through the 70s, I believe he was always a babyface. And if he's done anything as a heel, it's been in the very recent years, back before he went back to work for WWE as an agent, maybe with TNA or Ring of Honor or something. And I don't even know that to be so. I just am speculating if at any point in time he did, it would have been there. Off the top of my head, there probably have been more people who were career-long heels than career-long babyfaces. It's hard to stay a babyface for many, many, many years. I mean, you know, you think of like the greatest, most popular babyfaces of all times. Hulk Hogan would certainly be one. And then there come a point in his career where, you know, that had run out. He had to really turn heel. People were booing him. If you remember, before he joined the NWO, he was really getting booed all over. And the fans were really, really turning against him. So, you know, it becomes a necessity at some point in time to do that. Now, I think it hasn't John Cena, for the most part, always been a babyface in WWE? And I know he's done some heel stuff before coming to WWE, and maybe he's, you know, this is kind of out of my era because of the modern, being, you know, modern stuff. I can't remember it like I can the classic wrestling stuff. But I think for the most part, he's been a babyface in WWE. And you see how, you know, it would be very good for him to turn heel. And, but they're not going to because of the merchandising aspects. I know from just, you know, some of the stuff that Dave and Brian have said that there have been movements in, you know, over the last few years to turn John Cena, and it needs, for the sake of creativity and storyline, to be done, but it's just, you know, Vince McMahon keeps vetoing it because, you know, he's such a huge merchandise seller to the kids. And that's really one of the biggest problems. Well, you know, there are a lot of problems with current WWE, but one of the big ones is the fact that they get locked into this stagnant creativity where they can't turn people that need to be turned because they're big merchandise sellers. They're locked into this PG stuff because, you know, Linda McMahon running for Senate and all this, they want to, you know, their surface reason is, you know, they want to be more kid friendly or whatever, but I think the true reason is because Linda McMahon's running for Senate and they don't want problems there, you know, people using that against them. And so you have things like the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view with no blood and no big spots and so whatever, and it just becomes a very stale product. All these people are locked in, the same people have been in forever. The bad guys can't really be, you know, bad. Everybody's just kind of got this very vanilla. It's just very stagnant. And as long as they keep the standards they've got now, it's going to be very, very hard to break out of. I mean, you know, for wrestling to really hit a new peak right now, John Cena needs to go heel. Randy Orton needs to go babyface, but as a more very cutting edge, like Steve Austin type babyface, where he needs to be a lot edgier than he is now. And it's just hard for these guys to be cool when compared to MMA and UFC, which is cool right now, where you've got these characters like Kimbo Slice and Chuck Liddell, who's very, you know, and they go in the ring and actually do these. It's not even a matter of real versus fake. It's, you know, MMA is, in fact, real. You are seeing real fights that are going to have blood in them. They're going to be violent. And, you know, WWE just doesn't, they want to stay very, you know, PG-oriented, and it's making it difficult creatively. You can just tell there's just nothing, just so stagnant right now. And, you know, it's not anything to do with the talent or anything like that. I think they have, you know, a lot of times people always remember back and say, you know, the classic wrestling was better, and certainly I preferred it more. But the truth of the matter is, you know, there are better wrestlers now than ever have been. They are better athletes now than there ever have been. The matches are actually average across the board better. It's just creatively, it's very, very difficult. And of course, then there's the problem of can't create new stars, because you lock these guys into, if anybody basically hits upper mid card to main event, they're around forever, because they got so many fingers in merchandising, video games, action figures, you know, just t-shirts and all that stuff that they're merchandising now. And that's where the money comes from. So they lock these guys in because the company's making money off these guys. And as long as they're selling a profitable amount of stuff, they're not going to stir the pot with these guys. And it's made it very, very bland. And hopefully that can change at some point in time. And I don't know for sure until Linda loses for, you know, the office she's running for, and, you know, Ultimate Fighter continues, if it continues to be competitive with Raw and beat it occasionally, at some point in time, maybe Vince McMahon will come out of his creative blahs and get something moving again. But I'm sure there's more, and I'm sure there are people who have been heels for the entirety of their career. I think back to like some of the primary areas that I grew up watching, thinking back to like Memphis. You know, those guys turned all the time. Jerry Lawler, yeah, he was the most popular wrestler ever in Memphis, but he turned, you know, not all the time, not regularly, but he did have several runs as a heel. And, you know, he would flip-flop with Bill Dundee as who was the babyface and who was the heel there. Austin Idol, sometimes babyface, sometimes a heel. They certainly, these guys would go to other areas and that'd be different. I think in Continental, Southeastern, you know, everybody turned at one point in time. You think, you know, well, what about Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden? Well, Robert Fuller was a babyface through most of Southeastern wrestling. He only really stuck to the heel part from, in fact, he was a babyface going into the match where Bob Armstrong lost the Steel Cage Loser Leave Town match. I think that was 86, and the summer of 86. He went in as Bob Armstrong's partner, and that's where he turned heel. And I don't believe he ever turned back after that, but he went in as a babyface. Jimmy Golden was a very good babyface for Southeastern throughout like 1981, 82, 83. I mean, he was I think, babyface more than he was heel there. So I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head in Southeastern and Continental that stayed as one or the other. Even the Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony had some time spent as a babyface. Thinking to the AWA now, maybe Vern Gagne would be one, although, you know, the demarcation between heel and face was really blurred back, you know, in the early part of when he was wrestling. But I don't know of him ever doing an actual heel run. I think he was always a babyface. Well, Greg Gagne would be another guy who I think was always a I don't think Greg Gagne ever had a heel run anywhere. Maybe Larry Zbyszko. I can't recall Larry Zbyszko having a face run anywhere. Perhaps he did, but he was... Oh, yeah, of course he was when he turned on Bruno. So he started out as a face, and then when he turned on Bruno, but after that, I don't think he had a... Well, you think after his active career, he had did some babyface stuff when they were doing WCW Nitro, because... he had the match against, I think, Eric Bischoff, and then I think maybe he wrestled Scott Hall also. Let's see. I think that's all I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure there are more, and if I went area to area to area, I may can remember more. I wonder if, did King Kong Bundy ever have a run as a babyface? I'm thinking back to when he started out, his early days, Memphis and World Class, he was always a heel. I think he was always a heel in WWF. I wonder if he ever turned. That's an interesting question. And I think there are a few around, but for the most part, everybody pretty much has to turn at some point in time to have any credibility. Let's see. This is from... Richard, and it says, just started listening to your show and it is awesome. Well, thank you. And I'm not the Miz, but thank you for saying that. I really enjoy the fact you're very knowledgeable and never rush your responses to questions. I guess that's a nice way of saying I babble on. So I have two questions. One, do you remember a fantastic match from Worldwide in 1993, maybe July or August, between Ric Flair and Johnny B. Badd? I think it had two commercial breaks and went for almost 30 minutes. In my opinion, it was so good it reminded me a lot of the Flair Sting from Clash 1. If you've never seen it, it's worth trying to find. I definitely remember that match because they were quite high on Johnny B. Badd back in that 92, 93, 94 era. He was, we're talking about Mark Merrow, later as he was known as Johnny B. Badd, the Little Richard type gimmick he was using, was far more showy than really anything WCW was doing at the time. And you think back to this era, that was really the change over the early 90s. Especially like 93, 94, was kind of the change over where they were trying to compete with WWE as far as entertainment goes. They were coming up with these characters like Big Josh and Johnny B. Badd and Oz and Arachnoman and the Desperados and Black Blood and the Super Invader and stuff like this. They were trying to go with the more cartoonish characters as a way to compete with WWE or WWF at the time. Most of them failed, of course, miserably, as people looked at that time for WCW, which was coming out of the old NWA era. They wanted it to be more sports oriented and legitimate looking, and the WWF to be more cartoonish. And just like everybody has always done, they've tried to fight fire with fire when going against WWE, not realizing that that's exactly the wrong thing to do. They need to offer an alternative to WWE. I mean, every organization has tried it. They try to out... and TNA is like the primary example now, where they try to be WWE Lite, as it's often called, instead of offering an alternative to it. And that's why WWE, another reason they've become so stale, is because nobody is forcing them out of the box. They have created this sports entertainment box of what it is. If a group would come along and do a more sports-oriented, legit type product, then they might offer some competition because it would be different. Instead, they always try to do what WWE has down to a science, and it fails. And so this was that same type of era. And Johnny B. Badd actually had a lot of potential. Mark Merrill was a really good athlete, had a really interesting look to him. When he toned back the Johnny B. Badd character a little bit, I think it actually worked to his advantage. But then he just kind of stalled out. I mean, he started off very strong, but then he just never really got the big push after about 94 or so. They just sort of, well, Hulk Hogan came in, and all his people that he brought kind of just pushed him to the back burner, and he lost all of his momentum. And then when he went to WWE as just Mark Merrow, they tried to repackage him as, and it was quite a boring, you know, ex-boxer kind of thing. And then Sable completely overshadowed him, so he really lost, really stalled out what could have been a really good career for him. I think the hiring of Hulk Hogan pretty much derailed him from going really far up the card. But at this point in time in 93, they were really pushing him hard, and he was doing quite well. I just recently completed my collection of the old WCW comic book from Marvel Comics, which came out in 92, 93. It was a 12-issue series. They canceled after 12 issues, and Johnny B. Badd is prominently featured on it. In fact, he's on the cover of at least one issue, if not more, back then. So he was like really one of the faces they were putting out there, and he was holding his own quite well. Question number two: if Brian Pillman was still alive, and despite his physical limitations in 1997, do you think he and Steve Austin could have had a main event program a la Austin Dude Love, or were they going that direction? Well, absolutely, because Steve Austin was, you know, legitimately very good friends with Brian Pillman, and so he would have certainly pushed that. He would not have, you know, as much has been said about his derailing Jeff Jarrett from a program, and Brian Pillman would not have suffered from those same problems. But physically speaking, Brian Pillman had all the limitations because of his leg at that point. He also, of course, had the other issues that shorted his very good career. But Brian Pillman was a good enough personality, far and away a great personality, that he could have worked around those limitations and had a great, great feud with Steve Austin had he not physically deteriorated so bad. And again, Austin would have very much been behind that push. And also, he had another ally in Bret Hart, in that he was good with that camp as well. So he had many more friends than enemies in there that would have normally the politics could have worked against people like Jeff Jarrett. Brian Pillman was pretty much well liked all the way around all the major power players. I don't really know of his relationship with like Shawn Michaels and Triple H and the people who later, you know, became power players, especially Shawn Michaels coming up. But he had Bret Hart on his side. He had Steve Austin on his side. And if he didn't become enemies with Shawn Michaels, then really the sky was the limit for Brian Pillman, despite his physical limitations at this point in time. So thanks a lot, Richard, from Denver. I came through Denver on my vacation out west. I actually stayed in Denver one night, actually just outside of Denver one night. And I went to Mile High Comics while I was there and was utterly disappointed. What I have always heard so much about Mile High Comics. Their storefront was just horrible, absolutely awful. But I enjoyed Denver as a city, and the mountains there are very, very beautiful. I actually came all the way across through Vail, Colorado, down through that way, and it was just a wonderful time there. So thanks a lot for that question. And the next one here is... hope your trip across the country was fun. Followed you on Twitter, so thank you very much. This is from Magistar, or Magister, I guess. This is my question is in two parts. Who originated the claw hold? I know that it was rarely used, but in the 70s and 80s, it was primary submission hold. Was it Fritz Von Erich or some other wrestler? I think it was, in fact, Fritz Von Erich, Fritz, and Waldo Von Erich. If it were used, but they got the hold over. Without question, Fritz Von Erich got the hold over. But it was, honestly, you think about, you take Fritz and the Von Erichs out of the equation, that was the dumbest hold you could think. I mean, it was just essentially you putting your hand on somebody's forehead. And, anybody could do this. As kids, when we wrestled in the backyard and whatever and fought, you could squeeze as hard as you wanted to on somebody's forehead, and you were not going to hurt them, and you certainly weren't going to get juice. And so, bless Fritz Von Erich for getting that hold over. And I can't think of anybody before him who got it. Baron Von Ratzky is the other, famous claw hold person, but I think he come along after Fritz Von Erich. So, bless him for getting that hold over, but it was one of the dumbest holds ever. Part two of my question is Blackjack Mulligan. And it's interesting because Blackjack Mulligan also used the claw hold. Of course, it was well after Fritz Von Erich's time. This is part two of my question. Blackjack Mulligan and the Spoiler, as well as others, used a black glove along with the claw. I guess I should have read the rest of the question. Was the glove used to emphasize the effectiveness of the hold? Yeah, it was. It was, it just drew attention to... And the heels who used it, they would often speculate, them putting something in the glove to bring blood. And I know a lot of times, they would get color with the glove gimmick. And, it was just a way of emphasizing the hold. Thank you. You also mentioned the Spoiler and Blackjack Mulligan and Fritz Von Erich, and of course there was a Baron Von Ratzky who also used the claw hold. And I'm not sure who else off the top of my head. Of course, the Von Erich kids, obviously. And I noticed the other night on TNA, Lacey Von Erich broke out the claw hold, and that was pretty cool to see it brought back. Although she just looks so unathletic to me. I mean, she's just so skinny and got those spindly legs. I mean, she's a very attractive girl, don't get me wrong, but she just does not look like, she just looks frail to me. I don't know, she just, I hear she's just abysmally awful. I don't know. I've never seen enough of that. In fact, that on her on TNA was the first time I've ever, I guess, even seen her in a ring. I didn't get to see any of her WWE developmental stuff, but it's going to be interesting to see how she turns out. I know she's got a lot of detractors. I don't guess personally, but as far as her work goes. So, but it was cool to see the claw brought back. And I grew up as a teenager getting a world-class syndication, And so I got to see my share of the claw. You know, one of the best uses of the claw hold I ever saw actually was in the Ric Flair Kerry Von Erich match, where Kerry lost the world title back to Ric Flair from Japan. And Kerry had Ric Flair in the abdominal stretch, and then he applied the claw hold to the to his side. And you know, now that looked like that would hurt. You know, obviously it still worked, but it looked like that would be painful and uncomfortable to do that. So, you know, I at least give props for that. But as far as just the, you know, putting your hand on somebody's forehead and acting like you're squeezing it is was pretty lame, I always thought. And then there's always been the story where Fritz Von Erich supposedly, you know, was selling the claw hold to the other wrestlers and was bragging about it, and he put Danny Hodge in it, and Danny Hodge just completely no-sold it. And I don't know if that story's true or not, but it's been often repeated, whether it is or isn't. Okay, let's we've been going this segment here almost 30 minutes. Good grief. So let's take another break real quick, come back, and maybe catch a couple more of these questions. So we'll be right back after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the former World Tag Team Champions, the Midnight Express, with Jim Cornette. Mr. Cornette. Well, first of all, you don't get no fancy intro today. Maybe I'll do it after I finish having my piece to say here. But right now, I felt like everybody ought to see beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan. And how many times have I come out here, David Crockett, and said that the Midnight Express lost the match and it was our fault? Huh? How many? How many times have I said it was our fault?
Never.
You know what a goose egg looks like? That's exactly right. Pay attention. But it was our fault. We lost the match to the Road Warriors, and it was our fault because we got caught with our pants down, brother. Plain and simple. We trusted the Road Warriors just like Lex Luger and Sting trusted them and got the shaft. Just like all these people trusted them and got the shaft. We're supposed to be the ones to jump from behind. We're supposed to be the ones with all the dirty tactics. So we trusted them a little too far. First of all, Paul Ellering came over and he drugged me down off that apron from behind. And I'll be the first to say it. I can't whip Paul Ellering. So Sweet Stan Lane, he jumped down there and he tore into Paul Ellering and he was beating his brains out. But the Road Warriors, the guys who like to fight, the two baddest guys in the world, took that opportunity to both of them, jump Bobby Eaton from behind, threw him out of the ring, run his head in the post, busted his head open, made him see him double, he didn't know where he was, and they massacred him out there on that floor. Well, I came back around, I got Stan up, he saw what had gone on with his friend, and Stan Lane, with more guts in his little finger than the Road Warriors had in their whole stinking bodies, he jumped in there, and he fought both of them, because of what they'd done to Bobby, and because the titles were on the line. But the odds were against him, and he knew that, and he was shining pretty good for a while. But then they got him down, and they were doing a number on Stan. I tried to get Bobby up. His head was busted. He couldn't see straight, and I tried to get him to go back to the dressing room. But Bobby Eaton, because that's the kind of guy that he is, he pushed me away. He saw the titles were on the line, and he saw his friend was in trouble, and he tried to get back in that ring, and he did. He jumped up on that apron, and when Stan fell close to the corner, then Bobby Eaton, he made that tag, and he came in, and he was kicking those big freaks' butts all the way across that ring. But the damage was already done. An animal came out of that corner and he clotheslined him Goofy and he pinned him 1, 2, 3. And I've never gotten mad at Bobby for losing the match because he don't very often. And I didn't get mad at him this time because he showed more guts in getting back in that ring than the Road Warriors have ever known the meaning of, or Paul Ellering or any of them together. So I tell you this, Road Warriors, you say you like to fight. Well, it's a corny saying, I know it is, but fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. If you've got the guts to get back in the ring with the Midnight Express and put those World Tag Team title on the line, you like to fight, well, that's what you're going to get. The damnedest fight you ever been in your life, brother, because we're going to show you some dirty tactics and some back jumping next time around. And right now, because Bobby's not able to yet, I'm going to send Stan in the ring by himself. And I pity the poor fool, to use an expression from Mr. T, that wants to get in the ring with the gangster of love, Sweet Stan Lane.
Okay, we're back. I'm going to hit a couple more questions. I do, again, want to encourage you, if you've never been to my website, flyingbodypress.com or carlstern.com, they all go the same place. Please go check it out. It's a blog type website where I update it a few times a week with different things, wrestling related, comic book related, movie related, just MMA stuff, just whatever I'm interested in. You go there, check it out, see some of the articles I've put up. I'm putting up my entire comic collection and my thoughts on the individual issues. Plus, as a way to make money, I have an eBay store which you can access from that website and maybe pick up some stuff from there if you see something that strikes your fancy. I appreciate it. I also do podcasts for that website that are more comic book heavy and comic book news heavy. I've only recorded one episode so far because of the move and everything. I'm probably going to record something else tomorrow night to put up on there, and appreciate all your comments, feedback on that as well. Let's go to Matt, and he says, two wrestlers who were on WTBS said to be brothers of more popular wrestlers were Johnny Rich, a brother of Tommy Wildfire Rich, and Brett Wayne Sawyer, a brother of Buzz Sawyer. Were these guys really brothers, and what do you know about the wrestling careers of Brett Wayne and Johnny Rich? That again is from Matt. Okay, Johnny Rich, I don't know how they build him on WTBS, but in Continental and other places, they build him as a cousin to Tommy Wildfire Rich, and he was, in fact, actually a legitimate cousin, though distantly so, to Tommy Rich. In fact, there were three, quote, Rich cousins. There were Johnny Rich, Tommy Rich, and Davey Rich. And Davey Rich and Johnny Rich were a tag team called the Party Patrol that worked Continental during the later days of that promotion. Now, Davey Rich was actually longtime Memphis jobber David Haskins. And the way I've always understood it, had it explained to me, is that Tommy Rich and Johnny Rich were legitimate cousins, and that Johnny Rich and Davey Haskins were legitimate cousins, but that Davey Haskins wasn't directly related to Tommy Rich. It was just however that works out. I don't remember. That's the way it was always explained to me. Johnny Rich, I got to see pretty much all his career. I mean, he wrestled a lot in Southeastern Continental. He spent most of his career there. He did work some other places, Mid-South, and of course, you said Georgia, and I think he might have had a stint or two in Memphis. I can't remember, but I saw most of Johnny Rich's career, a lot of Tommy Rich's career, and so I'll talk on Johnny Rich first. Johnny Rich, early on in the Southeastern wrestling days, his first, I guess, real push anywhere is like being, you know, something other than just a job guy who happened to be related to Tommy Rich, who was moving up, would have been in Southeastern wrestling, where he was in the original version of the Rat Patrol Incorporated. And the Rat Patrol was actually, you know, it sounds like the insider term, rat, and I guess it had that, you know, kind of insider double meaning there, that they were, you know, on patrol for rats, because there were three young guys. But what it actually stood for were the last names of the people involved. The R was for Johnny Rich, the A was for Scott Armstrong, and the T was for Tonga Kid, and they were the original Rat Patrol. Well, Tonga Kid didn't stay around a real long time in Southeastern. He ended up going to WWF to have that first big run up there, where he headlined a few shows against Roddy Piper. And he was replaced by Scott Armstrong's brother, Steve Armstrong. So the Rat Patrol, for the most part, was Johnny Rich, Scott Armstrong, and Steve Armstrong. Now, Tommy Rich during this time was in Memphis and Georgia, and he only came into Continental, I think, in 1985, when they first changed over to Continental Wrestling, was when he and Johnny Rich first came in and started teaming up together originally. Well, Tommy Rich didn't stick around a real long time in Continental and team with Johnny, and moved on, and ended up, Johnny, for the most part, always ran with Scott Armstrong and Steve Armstrong, and worked a long time against Tom Pritchard as over the U.S. Junior title. And so they were, you know, on and off main rivals for each other for a long, long time. Johnny Rich, after Continental pretty much wrapped up and died, Johnny Rich ended up in the WCW as an undercard guy there, and ultimately just disappeared completely from the scene. I'd been told he had some sort of stomach malady, whether he tore a stomach muscle or had developed some sort of stomach problem or disease. I always heard that's why he ended up leaving wrestling. Now, he's popped up at a few of these nostalgia shows, although I haven't personally ran into him. Some of the, he's only been at two or three of them, and they happen to be the ones I didn't go to. I'd heard he had put on a considerable amount of weight, as I guess everybody does, but now the last time I heard he popped up down in Dothan, he was actually looking pretty good. So I don't know what he does for a living anymore or anything like that, but his wrestling career lasted from the very early, I think he probably come around maybe 79, 80. It might have even been as late as like 81. And he was gone and out of the business by 1990, 1991, something like that. Brett Wayne Sawyer was the brother of Buzz Sawyer. I believe they were legitimate full brothers. It might have been half brothers. I've heard that before, but I believe they were full brothers. Like Buzz Sawyer, Brett Wayne Sawyer was reputed to have a lot of issues and so forth, and his career never really rose above the lower mid-card ranks. He had a pretty good run with Buzz Sawyer there in Georgia. I guess that was the pinnacle of his career. He did some stuff for Mid-South and UWF. And world class as well, also up in the Central States area, but he was never like a big headliner or anything like that. A pretty good worker. Of course, Buzz Sawyer was a really great worker, but they had so many issues and were, you know, there's a couple of guys who you very rarely hear anything, you know, good about as far as their relationships with other people. They seem to make a lot of enemies, and I think pretty much kept them from ever topping out. Of course, Buzz Sawyer died in the early 1990s at a, I think he was only probably like 32 years old or so. Brett Wayne Sawyer, as far as I know, is still alive. Yeah, if he passed away, I don't remember when that is, and I don't believe that to be the case, and I don't know whatever ever ultimately happened to him. I'll quit hearing anything about Brett Wayne Sawyer in the early 1990s. I think he did some, did some training and stuff, and was involved in the early training of Ken Shamrock as a pro wrestler, but I think there was a lot of controversy about that too, as far as how much training he actually did. Versus what people paid for. Let's see here. This is from Neil, and I think this is China Neil. Yep, Neil from China. Let's see here. This is thanks for your response to my last email about wrestlers and films. I looked up Nate Pendleton. And I have seen him in the Marx Brothers film at the circus, but I didn't know he was a wrestler turned actor. Yeah, and again, if you haven't heard that show, go back and check it out, because Nate Pendleton was not just a wrestler. He was a tremendous wrestler who was a silver medalist in the Olympics and would have been a major star in the 1920s, 1930s, had he not been locked out of the wrestling trust and made enemies with Strangler Lewis and his bunch, and ended up getting into a shoot with John Pisek, who injured his leg during that shoot and pretty much went full-time into movies after that and left pro wrestling. So, pretty interesting story on Nate Pendleton. Neil goes on to say, I want to ask you about Chris Palace, a.k.a. King Kong Bundy. When I did a search for him on the net, I read he was also an actor, only three movies, and that his moniker was the inspiration for the Bundy family name, the TV show Married with Children. Recently, I was reading a daily news update on Wrestling Observer about Hornswoggle when I was reminded of King Kong Bundy's match with Hillbilly Jim and the Midgets from WrestleMania 3. Personally, I thought it was the beginning of the end for Bundy's WWF career as a main eventer, and he had just been in a big feud with Hogan at WrestleMania 2 the year before. I guess with Andre turning heel, they needed to make Andre the true dangerous big man in the company. Says, I read on Wikipedia that Bundy was discovered and got his name while he was in world-class championship wrestling. Do you have any memory of Bundy's early years in world-class? And then he says, I cut and pasted the excerpt from Wikipedia below. I think I remember hearing you say you weren't a big fan of Gary Hart in your early years when you watched wrestling. But do you think Gary Hart had a significant impact on launching Bundy's career with the WWF? And then he posted this from Wikipedia. It says, Bundy took the King Kong Bundy name during a storyline while working with World Class Championship Wrestling. Bundy was discovered and developed as Big Daddy Bundy by the Von Erich family. He wore blue jeans with a rope belt, and he was a fan favorite. So there, that's pretty much clears up what we was talking about earlier. After a dispute with the Von Erich family, Bundy was recruited by manager Gary Hart and dramatically reintroduced as King Kong Bundy, wearing a black singlet for the first time to signify the change. He lost his hair during the feud, adding to his signature look. I believe all that is pretty much straight up. I remember King Kong Bundy when he had the jeans and the rope belt and had hair. If you ever want to see King Kong Bundy in as King Kong Bundy with hair in a match, look up. I'm sure it's on YouTube. If not, it's readily available at different places. Fritz Von Erich's retirement match, where they did his big retirement at, I believe it was at the stadium there in Dallas. That's King Kong Bundy with hair is who he wrestled. And that in that match ended up being, or that show actually ended up being, I won't say a disaster, but it was a tremendous disappointment, business-wise. It being supposedly Fritz Von Erich's retirement and all. Bundy, of course, I remember Bundy also in Memphis. I believe Jimmy Hart was managing him there, and this would have been, I believe, right after World Class. So I think he went there before going up to WWF. As far as whether Gary Hart was responsible for his new look and change, I don't know, but it makes sense that probably that would be the case. And, you know, King Kong Bundy was a good heel. He was interesting. He had an interesting physique. You know, you think of big King Kong Bundy as this big fat guy and everything, but truthfully, if you look at the profile of King Kong Bundy, he wasn't that, he didn't have this giant gut or anything. He was just wide. His shoulders must have been just, you know, I don't know how wide, but he was like tremendously wide, and he wasn't, you know, during his prime that, you know, obese as far as just, you know, being fat. Go back and look at he was just, you know, his shaved head gave him this unique look because he was so, you know, wide, shoulder wide, but he wasn't that, you know, just fat. I mean, he was probably, truthfully, less obese than, like, Big Show is right now. And, you know, during his prime. Now, of course, he packed on weight later on, and then he came back and had that second run. And all the stuff about the Married with Children, I've always heard that, too. He even made a guest appearance on that show, which I'm sure is readily available on YouTube as well. Neil goes on to say, I read that he now has a career as a stand-up comedian. Have you ever seen or heard of any of his stand-up performances? So anyway, he says, I really wish I had access to YouTube. It's blocked here. that's too bad. So I guess you can't see that. But yeah, that's all pretty much right on. I've never met in person King Kong Bundy, but I have talked to him on the telephone, on a few occasions. And, back when I was, doing some promoting, that was the first time he called me, and I can't remember why. I just remember it was the weirdest thing. I walked into my house where I used to live, and back then I had an answering machine, you know. Well, that was a device that's went away, hadn't it? But anyway, I went in on the answering machine and turned it on, and it's King Kong Bundy. And he's telling me whatever it was he had to tell me. And so anyway, I called him back, and we ended up talking several times, and he's just absolutely the nicest guy you would ever want to talk to. I mean, just I've said this several times over the years on this show, you know, you meet a lot of these guys who are your heroes, and you go away wishing you'd never met them, and then you meet other people who pleasantly surprise you. King Kong Bundy was a very pleasant surprise, just the nicest guy you'd ever want to talk to. So that's King Kong Bundy. Neil goes on to say, by the way, I can't access CarlStern.com or FlyingBodyPress.com here in China. They must have a secret file on me. but actually I think it's because a lot of the Blogger.com sites are blocked. And even though I have domain names, so flyingbodypress.com, carlstern.com, they are built on Blogger. And so I think a vast majority of those sites are blocked. So I think it's actually who I'm using as a website more than any content I may provide. He goes on to say, I highly recommend you read DC's new Batman and Robin. And I am. I've actually have all 4 issues of that series so far. And the 5th one, I think, comes out this week. It's a very good series. I love the new Robin. He's just just such a brat, such a... an arrogant little guy. And of course the current Batman, if you don't want to hear the spoiler on this, I don't know what to tell you, it's been out for a little while now anyway, but Dick Grayson, the former Nightwing, the original Robin, is the new Batman and has been for a few months now. And so it's a very, I love the interaction between those two characters. They've been doing such a great job. So it's really one of the best books out there right now. No doubt about it. Neil also recommends Marvel's Incognito by Ed Brubaker. And, I actually don't know anything about that book. I love Ed Brubaker. I love his work on Captain America. One of my favorite writers. It says, and Dynamite's Buck Rogers and the Trial of Sherlock Holmes. I do want to get the Trial of Sherlock Holmes. I've heard so much about it. I've actually just started reading on Kindle the Sherlock Holmes novel. I've never read it before, believe it or not. It's one of those that fell through the cracks, but I'm just started reading it in anticipation of reading this series. So interesting. And then the Marvel project looks very promising. And yes, 2 issues of that out so far, and it is very good. I love that how they're trying to integrate the Golden Age stuff into the current Marvel universe. Marvel's got some time issues that they're going to have to address one of these days, but I like to see those Golden Age characters being brought in. Okay, let's see here. Oh, gosh, we've been going almost 20 minutes again this part. Let's take one more break, come back, do one more email, and then we'll wrap up this show. So be right back after this.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies. And I think that Hart is a sissy. Are you a sissy? Are you a sissy? I'm asking you a question.
No, I don't think
so. No, you're not a sissy, are you? Well, do you think that you're tougher than I am?
Oh, I didn't say that. I just said I wasn't a sissy.
Well, I don't think that this man right here is a sissy either. And I think that you're just pretty damn tough and one of the toughest people that I've ever wrestled. And I'll give a devil his dues and I'll pay him to him, Lawler. You're as tough a man as I've ever met. I don't especially like you. And I want to ask you something. Are you a sissy? Are you a sissy?
I think...
Let me say something, Lawler. Are you a sissy or not?
Hey, come on.
Okay, we're back. And had a little wacky recording issue going on there. I hope everything turns out okay. All right. One more email. This is from Ed. And Ed says, something I wonder about during the recent Raw. If Dusty Rhodes had come into WWF in the late 1980s in his trademark American Dream character rather than the polka-dotted nightmare, would he have gotten over? And this is just an opinion answer. Of course he would have, because he even managed to get that stupid polka dot nightmare gimmick over. I remember going and seeing Dusty Rhodes when he had just come to WWF. In fact, he hadn't even been on TV yet. And I saw him in Birmingham wrestling, I think, Randy Savage. Can't remember, it's been so long ago, but... I was just flabbergasted at this. Of course, he was over the top anyway, and so I guess it just, you know, how seriously could you take Dusty Rhodes in WWF? I don't know, but certainly he could. But again, you have to remember, WWF was, you know, it was much more cartoonish than the NWA, and he would have never come in as Dusty Rhodes, you know, just like he was in the NWA. They just weren't going to do it. They had to make him more mass marketable, more, I've always said they had to make him more McDonald's, more Walmart, more consumable for the mass market. You couldn't have him as, you couldn't have this bleach blonde fat guy who talked like a African-American Southern preacher and expect America to take him seriously, or that was of course the mindset of WWE, and so to just crank up the whole common man, and I don't know who come up with the polka dots or how that was supposed to fit in with anything, but by and large he got that gimmick over. I mean, he got over even there. So had he been played more seriously, would he have been a bigger star? In WWF, I don't know. I don't know that he could have in WWF during that era. I think I don't think the base WWF fans would have got that, honestly. So I don't know. But anyway, that's my thoughts. Still got several emails left that we'll jump into next show. So if I didn't get to yours, I will get to it. Please send me more to carl@carlstern.com. Again, that's Carl with letter K, K-A-R-L, @carlstern.com. Please visit and support my website, flyingbodypress.com /carlstern.com. If you collect comics, read comics, check out our store. We've got a lot for sale. And more going up, and that helps to pay the bills, and maybe you'll find something over there interesting that you like to read, and certainly there are some podcasts over there as well that you might want to check out. Thanks a lot for listening. I want to real quickly, again, give a plug to Grey Dog Software and the tremendous games they have over there, Total Extreme Wrestling, and also WMMA version 2. They are computer games for your Windows-based operating systems. I don't believe they're available for Mac, but maybe I'm wrong about that. They're definitely available for Windows. I love Total Extreme Wrestling, my favorite game. I play all the time. You know, people go by people and they're playing solitaire on the computer. I spend as much time on Total Extreme Wrestling as other people do on solitaire. Then I got the mixed martial arts version of the game, WMMA, and just tremendous games. Please check those good folks out over there, Adam Ryland, and that whole crew at graydogsoftware.com, and send them some business because it's a really, really great product. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll be back hopefully next week with a new show. Get back on schedule and on target here and get these emails answered and get a new newsletter out and some more stuff. So thanks a lot for listening, and please visit my website.
Lawler, I am going to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. I have been trained by the great Muhammad Ali. You don't know what they're up against. You're so cocky now. You think you're big stuff, big stuff. You haven't seen anything until you've met the iron fist of Andy Kaufman. You think I'm just a little man. Wait till you see I have been training, man. I have been training! I will get in the ring. I want peace and quiet. I want complete silence. And then I will get in the ring. Until I hear silence, I do not get in the ring. I want complete silence! Right now! Complete silence! I know a lot of you don't like me. Well, I'm going to give you a little present tonight. Because I'm from Hollywood and I'm in show business, and I got paid a lot of money to do what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to sing you a little song. Oh, I'm the king. Oh, I'm the king. I'm the new king of Memphis, Tennessee. I knocked that lawler out last week. I'm going to knock him out again. Yeah, I'm the king of Tennessee. I'm the king of wrestling, Tennessee. I knocked that lawler out. I'm going to knock him out again. Yeah, I'm going to knock him out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.